welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Tuesday, March 16th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. Our first article on the front page. Ernst, GOP platform can oppose a COVID relief, by Erin Murphy, Lee Des Moines Bureau, Des Moines. The latest round of federal COVID-19 relief is decidedly popular with the public, but U.S. Senator Joni Ernst said Monday she believes Republicans will be able to sell their unanimous opposition to the package once the stimulus money has come and gone. The $1.9 trillion package includes, among other things, a $1,400 stimulus payment to many Americans, an expansion of the child care tax credit in the form of payments to many American families, unemployment assistance, aid for state and local governments, funding for schools, food and housing assistance, and funding for vaccine production and testing. No congressional Republicans, including any from Iowa, voted in support of the package, but the legislation is popular with Americans. 7 out of 10 in a recent Pew Research Center poll said they favor the legislation. During a conference call with Iowa reporters, Ernst on Monday said she believes Republicans will be able to campaign on their opposition to the relief package despite its popularity. She said the economic payments are good for those families who are in need, but said some are going to people who don't need them. Ernst also criticized the pandemic assistance that went to Democratic-governed states and suggested Democrats will eventually propose a tax increase in order to pay for the package. Quote, right now, Americans are really excited about the opportunity for an economic impact payment, Ernst said. The euphoria of the bill will pass. People will get their economic impact payment, they'll spend it, and then we have the burden of paying for it. And when all that other stuff comes to light, that's when it becomes extremely unpopular, end quote. Ernst in November won re-election to a second 6-year term in the Senate. Her Republican colleague in the Senate, U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, is up for re-election in 2022. Grassley has not yet announced whether he plans to run again or retire. 3 of Iowa's 4 U.S. House members are Republicans. All 3 are in their first 2-year term. Quote, I do think this will be an argument that Republicans are able to campaign on, end quote, Ernst said. There is some partisan divide in the Pew Research poll on the pandemic relief. More Democrats than Republicans said they support it, but 41% of Republicans said they favor the package, including a majority, 63%, of lower-income Republicans. Our next front page article, study to plot future of Mason City Transit, survey on website aimed at those who don't use services, by J.C. Smith, Globe Gazette. Imagine a local transit system that changes in response to consumer demand, one that is text-based and could involve cars, vans, or buses, a system that evolves constantly as need arises. Perhaps that's the future of Mason City Transit. The city recently posted a 7-question survey on its site aimed primarily at people who don't currently use the system, said Dylan Schulte, the city's transit operations and safety manager. Quote, our goal is to provide the most efficient and effective service, Schulte said. We want to increase ridership while lowering costs, end quote. The survey is part of a longer, comprehensive look at transportation in Mason City, the first since 2004. Bourne Consulting LLC of Ames is overseeing the study at a maximum cost of $90,000, paid for with federal transportation money. Other parts of the study include an historic look at ridership, a second survey starting at the end of this month aimed at system users, technology and infrastructure upgrades, and potential routes changes to meet area growth and development. Before the pandemic struck in March 2020, Mason City's transit system, paratransit, fixed routes, and the Midnight Express were bucking a trend of dwindling ridership in other similar-sized communities, according to Schulte. Ridership here is growing, excluding the pandemic year of 2020 when nobody went anywhere and certainly not on public buses. The number of riders has grown 5.6% since 2016, from 209,097 to 220,713. It is also run almost entirely on federal and state money. Since 1996, according to City Finance Director Kevin Jacobson, Mason City has spent on average $45,000 of local local taxpayer money on its transit system. That is on total expenditures topping $1.2 million in fiscal year 2020. But there's always room for improvement. Quote, I don't like to ride the bus, end quote, said Jolene Hughes on Monday as she waited for a ride to a doctor's appointment. Quote, I would rather get a ride from someone, end quote. While most of the questions focus on why the participant doesn't use the service, one gauges interest in microtransit. A buzzword among transit experts since 2015, microtransit refers to a technology-driven system that can include both fixed routes or organic ride-sharing. Private transit has already embraced microtransit, think Uber and Lyft, but public systems often still rely on big, expensive buses, set schedules, and fixed routes that may not best serve a community. St. Louis began moving toward a microtransit-based model in 2018, according to an article in Governing Magazine. It's far too early to even speculate whether microtransit is in Mason City's future, but the question is an intriguing one. Quote, as Mason City evolves and changes, we need to evolve and change with it, end quote, Schulte said. The survey is available on the city's website until April 7th. And our last front page article, Clear Lake Mulls Core Diploma is a district looking to offer option to those who might not graduate, by Ashley Stewart, Globe Gazette. The Clear Lake Community School District is considering an option that would give students experiencing certain life circumstances the opportunity to graduate high school on time with their class. The Clear Lake Board of Education had its first reading of an updated graduation requirements policy that includes a core diploma earlier this month. The diploma allows students who are behind in credits, who are enrolled in the alternative school, and who meet other requirements outlined in the student handbook to earn fewer elective credits and still graduate from high school. Quote, sometimes it's life circumstance, sometimes it's things that are going on, and it just gives them an opportunity or a choice to do something that's a little bit different, end quote, said Chris Murphy, Clear Lake High School principal, in February. Murphy presented the core diploma to the school board in February, and the board gave him and Superintendent Doug Gee the nod to proceed with adding the offering to the district's graduation requirements policy. Quote, there's pretty specific criteria and expectations, end quote, said Tony Brownlee, school board member, in February. Quote, my view is as long as you have those two things well articulated and it's not just a free pass for everybody to stop taking classes, I'm supportive, end quote. Gee and Murphy presented the updated policy as well as the core diploma requirements and application to the school board on Tuesday, March 8th, during its regular meeting. And I think that is a typo. March 9th was a Tuesday, so it was either on Monday, March 8th or Tuesday, March 9th. The core diploma requires 8 fewer elective credits than a traditional diploma, but it is not available to all students. Quote, a kid can't come to us and request this. We're going to identify the kids that are eligible, and then we're going to talk to those kids about whether or not they'd want to, end quote, Murphy said. Students who wish to earn a core diploma must be approved by the high school principal and must be enrolled in the alternative school. At-risk indicators like homelessness, pregnancy, emancipation of a minor, and others will be considered when determining if a student is eligible to earn a core diploma. In the application, students will state their name, grade, credit total, and reason for wanting to earn a core diploma instead of a traditional one. To earn a core diploma, students must meet Iowa's core credit requirements, including 4 years of English and 3 years each of math, science, and social studies. Physical education, health, and financial literacy requirements must also be met according to the student handbook pages included in the school board's packet. They must earn 38 credits instead of the 46 required for a traditional diploma. A student who agrees to earn a core diploma will not earn grade points toward their GPA, will be excluded from class rank, and will be ineligible for local scholarships, the student handbook states. The core diploma is accepted by junior colleges and the U.S. Armed Forces, but four-year colleges do not accept it, Murphy said. The core diploma is an option Murphy believes will encourage students to complete high school instead of drop out. During the 2018-2019 school year, 5 Clear Lake students in grades 7 through 12 dropped out, according to the Iowa Department of Education's most recent data. According to that same data, more than 30 students in grades 7 through 12 dropped out between the 2014-2015 and 2018-2019 school years. Nearly 97% of the class of 2019 graduated in 4 years, above the state average of 91%, state data showed. Students who earn a core diploma will receive the same diploma as their classmates when they walk across the stage on graduation day, Murphy said, but their transcript would denote a core diploma instead of a traditional one. The Clear Lake Board of Education's next regular meeting will take place at 5:30 p.m. on Tuesday, April 13th at the Clear Lake Middle School Media Center. And then there is a little box within this article that breaks down the difference between the diplomas. Clear Lake High School traditional versus core diploma options. The Clear Lake Community School District's proposed core diploma requires 8 fewer elective credits than the traditional high school diploma, but the same credits in English, math, science, and social studies. Traditional diploma, 46 credits, 8 credits English language arts, including 1 semester of speech, 6 credits math, 6 credits science, 1 credit health, 6 credits social studies, 1 half credit economics, an accredited CPR course, physical education credit for every semester enrolled. Core diploma, 38 credits, 8 credits language arts, 6 credits math, 6 credits science, 6 credits social studies, 1 semester health, 4 years physical education, 7 credits electives, semester of financial literacy, integrated in other classes, and CPR, information courtesy of Clear Lake Community School District. Moving to page A2 for some local news. Climate group to host Zoom on carbon pricing, Globe Gazette staff. Luther College's Center for Sustainable Communities, in partnership with the Northeast Iowa chapter of Citizens Climate Lobby, is hosting a webinar on, quote, faith, social justice, and climate advocacy, end quote. The event will take place via Zoom from 7 to 8:15 p.m. on Thursday. Carbon pricing is a market-based strategy to drive up the cost of fossil fuels. As prices increase, consumption declines, and thus emissions decline. To address the issue of aggressive impact, legislation called the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act has been introduced in Congress. 2 speakers affiliated with Citizens Climate Lobby will provide an overview of the legislation and explain why they both support it and believe it is consistent with their faith commitments. Valentina Jimenez is a medical student at the University of Texas and serves as a Latino Catholic outreach presenter in Texas for Citizens Climate Lobby. Juan Rios is a Citizens Climate Lobby's liaison to the 9th Congressional District in the state of New York. Both speakers will be introduced by Ross Hadley, a Luther College alum, a small business owner in Decorah, a city council member, and a member of the Northeast Iowa chapter of Citizens Climate Lobby. Find the link at luther.edu/events. Our next article, Migrating Swans Move Through Iowa, Lowell Washburn Special to the Globe Gazette. Pushing hard on the heels of a retreating winter, migrating trumpeter swans are moving northward. For area wildlife enthusiasts, the sight and sound of wild swans is a heart-stirring event. With peak weights exceeding 30 pounds, the trumpeter swan is North America's largest waterfowl. Although swans were an abundant nesting species at the time of Iowa settlement, unregulated hunting for meat and skins coupled with wholesale wetland drainage led to a rapid demise. By the mid-1880s, swans no longer existed in the state. Similar declines were occurring elsewhere. By the 1930s, only 70 surviving trumpeters remained in the entire U.S. In 1993, the DNR launched a recovery project aimed at restoring a token population of wild swans to state marshlands. Spearheaded by Iowa wildlife biologist Ron Andrews, the project focused on the release of captive reared youngsters, cygnets, with the goal of establishing 15 nesting pairs by 2003. Many of those released birds survived, and in 1998, the first modern-day pair of free-ranging swans successfully nested in Iowa. Today, wild trumpeters are successfully reclaiming historic and restored wetland nesting areas across the state. During the summer of 2020, 119 nesting pairs of trumpeter swans were inventoried statewide. Swans currently nest in 37 Iowa counties, with the greatest densities occurring in northern Iowa. Sarah Gordo's daily COVID-19 update, special to the Globe Gazette, Monday, March 15th, data snapshot as of 10 a.m., 370,725 total lab-confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Iowa, 5,410 total lab-confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Sarah Gordo, 4,841 total recovered in Cerro Gordo, 5,641 deaths in Iowa, 85 deaths in Cerro Gordo, 4.1% 14-day positivity rate in Cerro Gordo, 123 days to double in Cerro Gordo, a status report of monitoring and testing of COVID-19 in Iowa, including county-level data provided by the Iowa Department of Public Health, can be found at coronavirus.iowa.gov/#current-status. Cerro Gordo County COVID-19 vaccination information. For up-to-date information on how you can get vaccinated against COVID-19 in Cerro Gordo County, visit cghealth.com/topics/vaccine-information-4-Cerro-Gordo-County/. COVID-19 testing options. Mercy One Family Health Line 641-428-7777. Quick Care Urgent Care Clinic 641-450-7000. Mason City Community Health Center 641-450-0601. Waypoint Medical 641-357-1999. Test Iowa 641-832-3500. School District COVID-19 Data Reports. Mason City Community School District. returntolearn.masoncityschools.org/COVID-tracker-dashboard. Newman Catholic. newmancatholic.org/parents/online-resources/. Clear Lake Community School District. sites.google.com/clearlakeschools.org/COVID-dashboard. Looking back, today is Tuesday, March 16th, the 75th day of 2021. There are 290 days left in the year. Today's highlight in history. On March 16th, 1945, during World War II, American forces declared they had secured Iwo Jima, although pockets of Japanese resistance remained. On this date, in 1972, in a nationally broadcast address, President Richard Nixon called for a moratorium on court-ordered school busing to achieve racial desegregation. In 1987, Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis announced his candidacy for the Democratic presidential nomination. In 1991, a plane carrying seven members of country singer Reba McEntire's band and her tour manager crashed into Otay Mountain in Southern California, killing all on board. U.S. skaters Christy Yamaguchi, Tonya Harding, and Nancy Kerrigan swept the World Figure Skating Championships in Munich, Germany. In 2004, China declared victory in its fight against bird flu, saying it had, quote, stamped out, end quote, all its known cases. Our next article, Zoo Streaming to Cheer Chimps, Associated Press, Prague. A zoo in the Czech Republic is trying a new way for its bored chimpanzees to monkey around during the coronavirus lockdown, FaceTime with other primates. The safari park in the northern town of Duvar Kralov installed a big screen in their enclosure to show them a live stream of what their fellow chimpanzees are doing on the other side of the country at a zoo in the southern city of Brno. The safari park launched the experimental project Thursday to enrich the everyday life of their six chimpanzees amid a strict lockdown and give them some fun after crowds of visitors disappeared when the zoo closed on December 18th. It's not clear when zoos will reopen. Zookeeper Radek Halvaka said Monday the chimpanzees miss people and can get bored. Halvaka said the youngest female, M, seems to be the chimpanzee to get the most excited about watching the other chimpanzees at the other zoo. Our next article, Denver Airport Closed for Second Day After Storm, by Mead Groover and Colleen Slevin, Associated Press of Denver. Denver's airport was closed for a second day Monday after a powerful late winter snowstorm dumped over 3 feet of heavy, wet snow on parts of Colorado and Wyoming, shutting down roads, closing state legislators in both states, and interfering with COVID-19 vaccinations. The 27 inches that had fallen by the end of Sunday at Denver International Airport on the plains east of downtown made it the fourth biggest snowfall in the city's history, according to the National Weather Service in Boulder. The storm system, fueled by moisture from the Gulf of Mexico, had moved out of the region and into northeastern Nebraska by Monday, said Evan Dorenzo, a meteorologist for the Weather Service in Boulder. Quote, it's definitely behind us, end quote, he said of the storm's snow and wind. There was still plenty of digging out to do. Denver's airport runways were closed just before noon on Sunday due to blowing snow and poor visibilities, and some stranded passengers spent the night at the airport. With the sun shining on Monday, over 200 plows were working to clear the snow and ice, but the runways were not scheduled to reopen until 2 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time, the airport said. In Wyoming, the National Weather Service warned that driving would remain dangerous for the next several days there because of slick and snow-covered roads. Some trucks and other travelers were stranded in eastern Wyoming, where several major roads remained closed Monday, including routes in and out of the cities of Cheyenne and Casper. Interstate 70 across much of the eastern half of Colorado was also closed. The U.S. Postal Service said many post offices would be closed in Colorado on Monday, and mail delivery in many locations would be severely curtailed or suspended. Federal officials shut down vaccine shipments to the region as the storm neared, so the vials packed in dry ice wouldn't spoil during mail delays, Wyoming Department of Health spokeswoman Kim Duddy said. I'm going to go ahead and move to the obituaries. Sherwood Marsh, December 1, 1928 to March 12, 2021, Eden Prairie, Minnesota. Sherwood Marsh, 92, of Eden Prairie, Minnesota, and formerly of Mason City, died Friday, March 12, 2021 at Prairie Bluff Senior Living in Eden Prairie. A funeral mass will be held at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, March 17, 2021 at Epiphany Parish Holy Family Catholic Church, 722 North Adams Avenue, Mason City, with the Reverend Neil Maternarak celebrant. Interment will be held at a future date in Fort Snelling National Cemetery, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Sherwood's family will greet relatives and friends 1 hour prior to Mass at the church on Wednesday. The son of Wallace and Opal McGregor Marsh, Sherwood was born on December 1, 1928 in Duluth, Minnesota. He grew up alongside his brother Douglas at various locations in the Midwest. Following high school, Sherwood enlisted in the United States Army and served in World War II from 1946 until November of 1948, with most of his time served in occupied Japan. On June 23, 1951, he was united in marriage to Claire Mary Schaefer at the Basilica of St. Mary in Minneapolis. Together, they would be blessed with 4 children and 61 years of marriage before Claire's passing in 2013. For many years, Sherwood worked as an engineer for Sabe Corporation in Hampton. Those grateful in sharing in his life are his children, Brian Marsh of Brainerd, Minnesota, Cheryl Marsh of New Hope, Minnesota, David spouse Ann Marsh of Chanahassen, Minnesota, and Robert Marsh of Burnsville, Minnesota, grandchildren Daniel Marsh of Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Laura spouse Nick Bodovinick of Raleigh, North Carolina. Sherwood is preceded in death by parents Wallace and Opal Marsh, his wife Claire Marsh, grandson Jeffrey Marsh, and brother Douglas Marsh. Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street, Northeast Mason City, 641-423-2372, colonialchapels.com. Myrtle J. Tapps, February 25th, 1924 to March 12th, 2021, Mason City. Myrtle J. Tapps, 97, of Mason City, died on Friday, March 12th, 2021, at her home, surrounded by her loving family. A funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. on Thursday, March 18th, 2021, at Trinity Lutheran Church, 213 North Pennsylvania Avenue. Mert's friend and pastor Kathy Graves, will officiate the service. The funeral service will be live-streamed on the Trinity Lutheran Church YouTube page. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, March 17, 2021, at Major Erickson Funeral Home, 111 North Pennsylvania Avenue. Interment will be held in Memorial Park Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be directed to the family of Myrtle Tapps or in Mert's memory to organizations dear to her heart. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.majorericksonfuneralhome.com. Mert was born February 25, 1924 to parents Wilhelm and Clara Calgard Willand and attended primary school at Bristol No. 5 and graduated from Kensett High School in 1940. Mert spent the first year after high school helping care for her widowed mother, and in return, her brothers funded her education at Hamilton's business Business College. After completion of her medical secretary degree, she worked for Drs. Chenoweth and Fallows and later Dr. John Nixon. Mert met and married the love of her life, Raymond H. Tapps, from Britt, Iowa, on June 16, 1946. Ray and Mert were avid dancers and loved to go with their friends to the Surf Ballroom for big band music and dancing. To this union, two daughters were born, Linda, spouse Thomas, alas, and Marilyn, spouse Grant Hyrod. Mert's greatest joy was spending time with her family and friends, especially so while playing a good game of Phase 10 or dominoes. Mert and Ray also enjoyed spending their winters in Mesa, Arizona after retirement. Mert was active in the community. She was secretary and chaplain in the VFW's Women Auxiliary, Post 733, and member of Women in Medicine Group. She was a Brownie and Girl Scout leader for her two daughters as they grew up. As a member of Trinity Lutheran Church, Mert took pride in organizing and participating in their yearly church bazaar. She crocheted prayer shawls for the hospitalized church members. Additionally, she took her love of music to local nursing homes, playing piano for Reverend Kathy's services. Mert's feisty spirit, fierce independence, and love of life will long be remembered by so many in the community she touched. She was survived and celebrated by many family members, including her daughter, Linda Alas of Mason City, and her children, Lori Meyering, spouse Phil, Scott Alas, spouse Molly Bing, daughter Marilyn Harrod of spouse Grant of Des Moines, and her children, Matthew Brandt, spouse Annie, and Brian Brandt, spouse Katie. Mert is also survived by 6 great-grandchildren and multiple nieces and nephews. Mert was preceded in death by her husband, Ray, her parents, Wilhelm and Clara, sisters Mildred Sorbo, Esther Bodie, Opal Solmanson, brothers Walter, Stanley, Bud, Clarence, and Orwin Willand, and son-in-law Thomas Alas. Arrangements are with Major Erickson at Funeral Home and Crematory, 111 North Pennsylvania Avenue, Mason City, Iowa, 50401, phone number 641-423-0924, www.majorericksonfuneralhome.com. Marilyn, known as Aux Stower, it's spelled A-U-K-E-S, July 19th, 1941 to March 13th, 2021, Buffalo Center. A funeral service for Marilyn Stower will be held at 1 p.m. on Saturday, March 20th, 2021 at the First Congregational Church in Buffalo Center. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior. Burial will be in Olina Mound Cemetery in Buffalo Center. Both the funeral and graveside will be live streamed on Oak Crest Funeral Services Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Oak Crest Funeral Services. Social distancing practices will be followed and masks are required. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the marchofdimes.org. Marilyn, known as Aux Stower, was born July 19, 1941 in Buffalo Center, Iowa, to Benjamin and Frances Lubin Aux. I apologize, I thought Aux was a nickname, but it is her maiden name. Marilyn graduated from Wooden High School in 1959 and continued her education at Hamilton Business School in Mason City, Iowa. On October 7, 1960, Marilyn married Edgar Stower. Marilyn and Ed farmed together for 53 years near Bancroft, Iowa, and Fairmont, Minnesota, and Elmwood, Wisconsin, where they resided for 36 years. Additionally, Marilyn was an administrative assistant for East Chain School District in East Chain, Minnesota, as well as a successful realtor in Ellsworth, Wisconsin. In 2013, Marilyn retired to Buffalo Center, Iowa, where she was blessed by the friendships of so many within the community. Marilyn was a wonderful gardener and a fantastic cook, whose kitchen never closed, always ready to set another place at the table, be it family or friend. Carrying her through times of joy and sorrow was Marilyn's deep and abiding faith in God, which played an integral part in her life. She had been a lifelong member of the Zion Covenant Church in Ellsworth, Wisconsin, and the First Congregational Church of Buffalo Center, Iowa. Marilyn's positive attitude and determination to overcome the challenges that physical limitations presented served as an inspiration to all who knew her. Marilyn died Saturday, March 13, 2021 at Mercy One North Medical Center, Iowa, in Mason City. She was 79 years old. Left to cherish her memories are her two children, Rick Stower, spouse Renee of Elmwood, Wisconsin, and Valerie Smith, spouse Gregory of Rome, Texas. 7 grandchildren, Chad Stower of New Richmond, Wisconsin, Travis Miller of Glenwood City, Wisconsin, Tristan Miller of Spring Valley, Wisconsin, Trent Miller, spouse Amanda of Spring Valley, Wisconsin, Lindsay Punati, spouse Rick of New Richmond, Wisconsin, Mitchell Stewart, spouse Samantha of Elmwood, Wisconsin, Madeline Smith of Dallas, Texas, and 12 great-grandchildren, Marilyn's sisters, Janice Missman of Forest City, Iowa, Joyce Kundron, spouse John of Summerfield, Florida, Beverly Adams, spouse Daryl of Buffalo Center, Iowa, Shirley Burma of Crystal Lake, Iowa, brother Robert Ox, spouse Paula of Des Moines, Iowa, many cousins, nieces, and nephews, and wonderful friends. Marilyn was preceded in death by her parents, Benjamin and Francis Ox, and brothers-in-law, Alan Burma and Roger Missman. Online condolences may be left at www.oakcrestfuneralservices.com. Jean, known as Jeannie Groppman, Mason City. Jean, known as Jeannie Groppman, 57, of Mason City, passed away on Sunday, March 7th, 2021, at the Mercy One North Iowa Medical Center. A memorial service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, March 19th, 2021, at Major Erickson Funeral Home, 111 North Pennsylvania Avenue. Services will be live-streamed on the Major Erickson Funeral Home YouTube page. A visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service on Friday. Interment will be held in Memorial Park Cemetery at a later date. Memorials may be made to the family of Jean Groppman. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.majorericksonfuneralhome.com. Major Erickson Funeral Home and Crematory, 111 North Pennsylvania Avenue, Mason City, Iowa, 50401. Phone number 641-423-0924, majorericksonfuneralhome.com. David James Bowers, Clear Lake. David James Bowers, 79, of Clear Lake, died Saturday, March 13, 2021, at his home. Funeral services will be 11 a.m. Thursday, March 18, 2021, at Clear Lake Church of Christ, 2010 14th Avenue North, Clear Lake, with Pastor Dan Miller and Dennis Gans officiating. Burial will be at Clear Lake Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, March 17, 2021, at the Funeral Home in Clear Lake, Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel, 310 First Avenue North, Clear Lake, 641-357-2193, colonialchapels.com. Mickey, known as Michelle Rundy, January 1, 1984, March 12, 2021, Northwood. Mickey, known as Michelle Rundy, 37, passed away Friday, March 12, 2021, in Northwood. A celebration of life will be held 4 p.m. Sunday, March 21st, 2021, at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street, Northeast Mason City, with Pastor Mark Doble officiating. Burial will be held at a later date. The celebration of life will be live-streamed on the Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel Facebook page. Visitation will be held 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday, March 21st, 2021, at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street, Northeast Mason City. Memorial contributions may be directed to the family, and a charity will be established at a later time. Mickey was born January 1, 1984, in Mason City, daughter of Denny and Cindy Rundy. She graduated from Central Springs High School, class of 2002. Mickey is survived by 2 daughters, Liberty and Mariah, significant other Josh Moore, parents Denny and Cindy Rundy of Mason City, brother Dan, spouse Aaron Rundy of Kensett, sister Kim, grandma Hetty Rundy, and several nieces and nephews. Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street, Northeast Mason City, 641-423-2372, colonialchapels.com. Moving to the sports page, Rockford's Ott picked to play in Shrine Bowl. 4 other North Iowa seniors selected for All-Star Game in July by Globe Gazette staff. Zach Ott of Rockford is among 5 North Iowa players selected to participate on the North squad in the 49th annual Iowa Shrine Bowl football game. On July 24th, a group of Iowa's most talented pre-college football players will line up across from each other in the UNI Dome for the premier high school football game. The players are selected by a process of nomination by coaches, balloting by statewide sports media professionals, and officiating invitation from a representative of the Iowa Shrine Bowl. The seniors from Rockford led the Warriors with 54 tackles during the 2020 season, with 39 solo tackles, one sack, and seven tackles for the loss. Other North Iowa players joining Ott on the North squad are Lake Mills senior Caleb Bacon, team high 103 tackles, 90 solo tackles, and 7 tackles for loss. St. Agnes senior Sage Holsizer, 28.5 total tackles, 22 solo tackles, 3 sacks, 9 tackles for loss. West Fork's Levi Jansen, 41 total tackles, 29 solo tackles, 1.5 sacks, 6.5 tackles for loss. Clear Lake senior center Carson Kraft. According to the Iowa Shrine Bowl website, this will be the game of a lifetime for many of these players because when they line up, quote, each and every one will also be stepping up to help a child who has been less fortunate in life other than them and who's desperately needs their help, end quote. According to the website, the game brings honor and recognition to the players, their schools, and their communities. It has also been an effective tool in raising money for the Shriners Hospital for Children. To date, the Iowa Shrine Bowl has raised over $2.76 million for the Shriners Hospitals for Children. Funds for the Shriners Hospitals for Children are developed by ticket sales, advertising in the Shrine Bowl program, merchandise sales, contributions, and sponsorships. Our next sports article, spring sports preview, Newman Catholic girls track and field. Knights young but anxious to succeed, Newman Catholic distance runners should be competitive, by Gunnar Davis, Globe Gazette. There is no shortage of things to figure out heading into the Newman Catholic girls track and field team's season. It's been 2 years since the last time any athletes on the Knights team competed in a meet. With only 3 seniors on the team, the Knights are young, and on top of that, this is a head coach Jerry Gatton's first year as full-time head coach. Quote, I'm excited, especially since it's my first year as head coach, end quote, Gatton said. Quote, that's kind of exciting because it's, can I put the right girls together? Am I going to judge it the right way? That's kind of thing, end quote. Despite the question marks for the season, Gatton has full confidence in one area of the squad, the long distance runners. The Knights have multiple long distance runners from a cross country team that finished 14th overall in the state meet in the fall. One of those runners is junior Maggie McBride, who finished 63rd overall individually in Fort Dodge. Senior Lily Stockberger didn't finish far behind McBride at the state meet and will also look to help lead this spring. McBride's goal is to finish her season down at the Blue Oval in Des Moines. Quote, after cross country ended, I actually started training a week after, McBride said, so I've been running for a while now, end quote. The Knights have spent the first couple weeks of their season getting back into shape. After spring break, the girls will hone in on certain events and relays before their first meet. Junior Bailey Birding will be one of the runners focusing in on her event after the spring break. The 400 meter hurdles, her race, is one of the toughest events in the sport. She hasn't run the event since her freshman season, but still has confidence for this spring. Quote, I would just like to lower my time, Birding said. Hopefully get some ribbons at some meets, end quote. Gatton also mentioned seniors Molly McGuire and Josie Fritz as leaders this season. Sophomore Reese Hemmen will take over the duties throwing at this shot put and discus. Although the goal is to qualify multiple events to state, Gatton said his athletes are taking a short-term, day-by-day approach. Quote, with each meet as long as you're PRing, Gatton said, that's what I hope they're looking for, end quote. Quote, I would like to see some of us down at the Blue Oval at the end of the year for state, Gatton continued. I think we have the ability to get some people down there, not only individually, but I can see a couple teams that we could put together, end quote. Newman Catholic's first meet is on March 30th at St. Agnes. And we also have a little box in this article that says Newman Catholic preview, head coach Jerry Gatton, last year, no season last year, this year, quote, I would expect us to have a strong long distance team and be able to compete in many relays. We will be very young with many freshmen out, so we will have lots of upsides to our future and unknown for this season, end quote, coach Gary Gatton. Schedule Tuesday, March 30th at St. Agnes, Monday, April 5th at West Hancock, Tuesday, April 13th at Osage, Thursday, April 15th at North Iowa, Friday, April 16th at Northwood Kensett, Tuesday, April 20th at Garner Hayfield Ventura, Friday, April 23rd at Charles City, Monday, April 26th at Lake Mills, Monday, May 3rd at Garner Hayfield Ventura, and Thursday, May 6th at Central Springs, which is a conference meet. And our next sports article, college men's basketball. Big Ten leads field with 9 NCAA bids. Iowa number 2 seed in West Region, Illinois, Michigan number 1 seeds by Stephen Hawkins, Associated Press. The Big Ten again has more teams in the NCAA tournament than any other conference, including a pair of number 1 seeds and 2 number 2s among its record 9 teams in the Big Dance. That is one more than the 8 Big Ten teams that made it to the last NCAA tournament played 2 years ago, when the conference doubled the number of teams it had in the 2018 tournament. Now that this regular season and all of the postseason and conference tournaments have been completed, college basketball has gotten a step further than it did last March, when the NCAA tournament was canceled because of the COVID-19 pandemic days before Selection Sunday and no 68 team field was set. The ACC and Big 12 both got 7 teams into this year's tournament, and the SEC got 6. The Pac-12 has 5 teams advancing in the Big East 4. For the second NCAA tourney in a row, 11 conferences sent multiple teams. Before 2019, that hadn't happened since 2015. There were automatic qualifiers from 31 conferences, down 1 from the usual 32 after the Ivy League opted out of the season. That meant an additional at-large berth. Big Ten teams Michigan and Illinois, 23-6, are number 1 seeds, while Iowa and Ohio State are number 2 seeds, with those 4 teams all in different regions. The Illini beat Ohio State in overtime to win the Big Ten Tournament Championship, and we're still cutting down the nets in Indianapolis, where the Final Four will also be played, when their spot in the field was being revealed for tourney to be played exclusively in Indiana. Illinois wasn't even one of the 8 Big Ten teams that made the NCAAs 2 years ago, when the Illini were 12-21 in what was Coach Brad Underwood's second season. Now they are on a top line for their first NCAA appearance since 2012-2013. Rutgers, in its 7th Big Ten season, made the NCAA tournament for the first time in 30 years. Moving to nation and world news, U.S. Capitol security breach, 2 charged with assault, investigators looking at whether chemical spray caused death by Michael Balsamo, Associated Press, Washington. U.S. officials have arrested and charged 2 men with assaulting U.S. Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick with bear spray during the January 6th riot, but they do not know yet whether it caused the officer's death. George Taninos, 39, of Morgantown, West Virginia, and Julian Cater, 32, of Pennsylvania, were arrested Sunday. The idea that Sicknick died after being sprayed by a chemical irritant has emerged in recent weeks as a new theory in the case. The arrests are the closest federal prosecutors have come to identifying and charging anyone associated with the deaths that happened during and after the riot. 5 people died, including a woman who was shot by a police officer inside the Capitol. But many rioters are facing charges of injuring police officers who were attacked with bats, sprayed with irritants, punched and kicked, and rammed with metal gates meant to keep the insurrectionists from the Capitol. Investigators initially believed that Sicknick was hit in the head with a fire extinguisher based on statements collected early in the investigation, according to 2 people familiar with the case. But as they collected more evidence, the theory of the case has evolved, and investigators now believe Sicknick may have ingested a chemical substance, possibly bear spray, that may have contributed to his death, officials said. Cater is the man in a video obtained by the FBI that showed him spraying Sicknick and others with bear spray, according to court papers. The men each made brief court appearances from jail via video conference on Monday and will remain locked up pending future hearings. A detention hearing was scheduled for Thursday for Taninos. An email seeking comment was sent to Taninos' lawyer, a person who answered the phone at the office of Cater Peter's lawyer said they had no comment. Also on Monday, security officials said they will soon scale back the perimeter fencing surrounding the Capitol in response to guidance from the U.S. Capitol Police that, quote, there does not exist a known credible threat, end quote, that warrants keeping the temporary barrier in place. The fencing will be scaled back in two phases, Timothy Blodgett, the acting House Sergeant at Arms, said Monday in a memo to members of Congress and their staffs. An inner perimeter will be moved closer to the Capitol building this week, providing access to nearby streets and some sidewalks, Blodgett said. Our next article, Vatican bars gay union blessing. Report God cannot bless sin, but LGBT Catholics still welcome, by Nicole Winfield, Associated Press, Rome. The Vatican declared Monday that the Catholic Church won't bless same-sex unions since God, quote, cannot bless sin, end quote. The Vatican's Orthodoxy Office, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, issued a formal response to a question about whether Catholic clergy have the authority to bless gay unions. The answer, contained in a two-page explanation published in seven languages and approved by Pope Francis, was, quote, negative, end quote. The note distinguished between the Church's welcoming and blessing of gay people, which it upheld, but not their unions. It argued that such unions are not part of God's plan and that any sacramental recognition of them could be confused with marriage. The note of immediately pleased conservatives, disheartened advocates for LGBT Catholics, and threw a wrench in the debate within the German Church, which has been at the forefront of opening discussion on hot-button issues such as the Church's teaching on homosexuality. Francis DiBernardo, executive director of New Ways Ministry, which advocates for greater acceptance of gays in the Church, predicted the Vatican position would be ignored, including by some Catholic clergy. Quote, Catholic people recognize the holiness of the love between committed same-sex couples and recognize this love as divinely inspired and divinely supported, and thus meets the standard to be blessed, end quote, he said in a statement. The Vatican holds that gay people must be treated with dignity and respect, but that gay sex is, quote, intrinsically disordered, end quote. Catholic teaching says that marriage is a lifelong union between a man and a woman, is part of God's plan, and is intended for the sake of creating new life. Quote, the presence is such relationships of positive elements, which are in themselves to be valued and appreciated, cannot justify these relationships and render them legitimate objects of an ecclesial blessing. Since the positive elements exist within the context of a union, not ordered to the Creator's plan, end quote, the response said. God, quote, does not and cannot bless sin. He blesses sinful man so that he may recognize that he is part of his plan in love and allow himself to be changed by him, end quote, it said. Francis has endorsed providing gay couples with legal protections in same-sex unions, but that was in reference to the civil sphere, not within the Church. Our next article, officials fan out to promote virus aid. Biden messengers hit the road for tour. They're calling Help Is Here, by Darlene Superville and Jonathan Lemire and Zeke Miller, Associated Press, Las Vegas. From a vaccination site in the desert west to a grade school on the eastern seaboard, President Joe Biden's top messengers, his vice president and wife among them, led a cross-country effort Monday to highlight the benefits of his huge COVID relief plan. Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris, and their spouses embarked on an ambitious tour this week to promote the $1.9 trillion plan as a way to battle the pandemic and boost the economy. The roadshow, dubbed the, quote, Help Is Here, end quote, tour by the White House, began with Harris visiting a COVID-19 vaccination site and a culinary academy in Las Vegas, and First Lady Joe Biden touring a New Jersey elementary school. Biden heads out on Tuesday. Quote, we want to avoid a situation where people are unaware of what they're entitled to, end quote, Harris said at the Culinary Academy. Quote, it's not selling it. It literally is letting people know their rights. Think of it as more as a public education campaign, end quote. The sales pitch was leaving Republicans cold. Senate GOP leader Mitch McConnell dismissed the target of doses that Biden set when he took office as, quote, not some audacious goal, end quote. He mocked Biden's talk of Americans working toward merely being able to gather in small groups by July 4th as, quote, bizarre, end quote. Our next article, Some EU countries suspend one vaccine. Blood clots among AstraZeneca recipients raise some concerns, by Frank Jordan's Associated Press, Berlin. As a growing number of European countries suspended use of AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine Monday over reports of dangerous blood clots in some recipients, concern is growing among U.S. public health officials that many Republicans will refuse to get vaccinated. Both the vaccine maker and international regulators say there is no evidence the shot is to blame for the blood clots. AstraZeneca's formula is one of three vaccines in use on the continent, but the escalating concern is another setback for the European Union's vaccination drive, which has been plagued by shortages and other hurdles and is lagging well behind the campaigns in Britain and the U.S. Across some rural areas of the United States, where former President Donald Trump remains deeply admired, there is strong opposition to getting vaccinated, a new survey shows. While polls have found vaccine hesitancy falling overall, opposition among Republicans remains stubbornly strong. A new poll from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research found that 42% of Republicans say they probably or definitely will not get the shot, compared with 17% of Democrats. The EU's Drug Regulatory Agency, meanwhile, called a meeting for Thursday to review experts' findings on the AstraZeneca shot. Digest: Cops defense fears settlement impact Minneapolis. An attorney for a former Minneapolis police officer charged in George Floyd's death asked the judge Monday to delay the trial, saying the announcement of a $27 million settlement for Floyd's family could make a fair trial impossible. Defense attorney Eric Nelson also raised the possibility of reviewing his previously unsuccessful motion to move Derek Chauvin's trial to another city. Quote, "I am gravely concerned with the news that broke on Friday," end quote, Nelson said, adding that the announcement, quote, "has incredible potential to taint the jury pool," end quote. Nelson also noted that Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison's son, Jeremiah, sits on the city council that unanimously approved the settlement and questioned the timing. Keith Ellison heads the prosecution team and often has been present in the courtroom. Haaland wins, okay, makes history, Washington. The Senate on Monday confirms New Mexico Representative Deb Haaland as Interior Secretary, making her the first Native American to lead a cabinet department and the first to lead the federal agency that has wielded influence over the nation's tribes for nearly two centuries. Haaland was confirmed by a 51-40 vote, the narrowest margin yet for a cabinet nomination by President Joe Biden. Four Republicans voted yes: Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan of Alaska, Susan Collins of Maine, and Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. Democrats had tribal groups hailed Haaland's confirmation as historic, saying her selection means that indigenous people who lived in North America before the United States was created will, for the first time, see a Native American lead the powerful department where decisions on relations with the nearly 600 federally recognized tribes are made. Interior also oversees a host of other issues, including energy development on public lands and waters, national parks, and endangered species. Briefly, immigration. The U.S. government plans to house up to 3,000 immigrant teenagers at a convention center in downtown Dallas as it struggles to find space for a surge of migrant children at the border, according to a memo sent Monday and obtained by the Associated Press. Nashville bombing. Anthony Quinn Warner, the man who blew himself up inside his recreational vehicle in a Christmas Day bombing in Nashville, grappled with paranoia and eccentric conspiracy theories, but there are no indications he was motivated by social or political ideology, the FBI said Monday in closing out the investigation into the blast. Brexit. The European Union said Monday it is starting legal action against the United Kingdom, arguing the former member does not respect the conditions of the Brexit withdrawal agreement and is violating international law. Germany. Two German state election defeats on Sunday jolted Chancellor Angela Merkel's bloc, shining a spotlight on chances of it being ejected from the government in September's national vote. A possible contender to succeed Merkel said Monday that the center-right needs to raise its game to keep the country's top job. Electric cars. Volkswagen plans six large battery factories in Europe by 2030 to power sales of more electric cars while driving down battery prices and making electric vehicles more affordable for entry-level buyers, the company said Monday. Wall Street. Stocks bounced back from a wobbly start Monday to notch a fifth straight gain. A Wall Street continued to eye the bond market. Treasury yields pulled back from Friday's sharp increase. The S&P 500 index rose 0.7% to a new high. Our next article, WNBA rolls out plans for 25th season celebration by Doug Feinberg, AP basketball writer, New York AP. The WNBA hopes to be back in home arenas for its 25th season this summer. The league on Monday announced a series of plans for the season, including a new marketing campaign, quote, count it, end quote, as well as celebrations of the league's milestones throughout its history. When the new season will start, it's still being finalized because of the coronavirus pandemic. WNBA Commissioner Kathy Eckel said that she expects it to begin in May. Last season, the league played a 22-game schedule at IMG Academy in Florida. The WNBA last year had a plan for a 34-game schedule before the coronavirus pandemic changed to that. There will be a break for the Tokyo Olympics in July. Quote, we're working really hard on the schedule, Eaglebert said. We have to get safety protocols in arenas and are hoping to play in our arenas like other sports are doing. Play in our 12 cities as the 12 markets are working on arena protocols, testing, and health safety, end quote. Quote, as we look to celebrate the first 25 years of the league, we are also setting the stage for the next 25 years. The WNBA's new distinctive 25th season logo and Count It campaign signify what makes the league unique, end quote, said Eaglebert. Quote, we are celebrating a quarter of a century of the impact the WNBA has made on sports and society and on generations of young and diverse athletes, end quote. The commemorative logo will be displayed on the court's jerseys and game ball, which will now be a Wilson basketball instead of Spalding. Other commemorative plans for the 25th season include the W25 to honor the league's greatest players since its inception in 1997 and new uniform iterations by Nike. Today's horoscope, March 16th, 2021. Share your thoughts and feelings with someone you trust, and you'll find it easier to shape your plans to fit your goals. A positive approach to life, love, and happiness will encourage others to support you. Mark each milestone you accomplish with a reward. And for all those Pisces out there, which is February 20th to March 20th, myself included, your horoscope is incorporate something you enjoy doing into your daily routine, educational pursuits that could boost your career, refuse to let a setback or someone's actions consume you, be productive instead of angry. For Aries, March 21st through April 19th, keep marching forward and don't stop until you reach your destination. Progress takes discipline, fortitude, and courage, but the result will be worth it. Don't stop believing. For Taurus, April 20th through May 20th, emotions will confuse you if you let them take control. Be realistic and you'll avoid getting caught in a no-win situation. Be willing to compromise and simplify. For a Gemini, May 21st through June 20th, sort through information, go over details carefully, look for discrepancies and make adjustments. Keep your guard up when dealing with people who talk big, expect a lot and offer little. For Cancer, June 21st through July 22nd, pay attention to detail, but don't lose sight of your deadline. Working quickly and finishing on time is as important as the effort you put into anything you pursue. For Leo, July 23rd through August 22nd, changes taking place will strike an emotional chord. Work to find new opportunities to fill any void you are feeling. Put your energy into self-improvement and solid, realistic plans. For Virgo, August 23rd through September 22nd, it's up to you to bring about change. Don't wait for someone to push you in the direction that benefits them more than you. Take control and embrace what you feel passionate about. And Libra, September 23rd through October 23rd, delve into something that makes you feel passionate. Emotional spending and joint ventures will not turn out as planned. You'll be misled by someone who lacks integrity. For Scorpio, October 24th through November 22nd, don't fold under pressure. When in doubt, take a pass. Gravitate toward the things you know are possible and that you enjoy doing. Seek out like-minded people to help you. For Sagittarius, November 23rd through December 21st, don't participate in something you don't want to pursue. Problems at home will surface if tempers flare. Keep the peace, but don't lower your standards or do something you'll regret. For Capricorn, December 22nd through January 19th, someone who opposes the changes you are initiating will question you. Don't get into an argument over something that isn't going to matter. As you move forward, follow your heart. And lastly, Aquarius, January 20th through February 19th, let your intuition lead the way and you'll find a way to use your skills and knowledge to your advantage. Reinventing the way you market yourself will help you in your professional aims. And that does it for today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Tuesday, March 16th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. You can access today's reading online at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful day.